week it was full. Every seat was taken. Every aisle was full. And I would tell you that I'm disappointed as I look out to see empty seats, but I held a parent conference at one of the schools I work at this week, and I had two parents attend. So this is, I feel like I'm speaking to, I'm in Rome. I'm the Pope speaking to the masses. Thank you. I want to talk just to give you an idea of who I am and how I ended up behind the pulpit this morning. I can tell you who I am, and then I'll try to tell you about how I ended up here. I've been in Tifton since 1989. I came here, got hired to teach school at Omega, Georgia, and was a fourth grade and seventh grade. Went taught fourth grade 3 years. And then I went to seventh grade, and I had my same fourth graders come back to me. And I stayed there, and then I became a principal in Tifton, was a principal at Annie Bell Clark out on Carpenter Road for a long time, and then I was a curriculum director and federal programs director at the board office. And then a couple years ago, 2 years ago, almost to the day, I turned in my key and I turned in my papers and I retired from the school system. And then I started doing a little consulting work for different school systems, Turner, back in Tift. And then a few months ago, I took a job at Bowen Donaldson Funeral Home, home for funerals, just providing some help when they need help. Part-time, not every day, not all day. Yesterday was all day, pretty much about a 13-hour day yesterday. But something I had no idea I was going to get into, but I got into. About a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, Pastor Sam stopped me as I dropped off the boys, and he said, "Alan, I've got two questions for you. We want to bring the men over and let them watch a football game at your house. We got a little man cave in the back," and he said, "Can we do that?" I thought, that's an easy one, because I'm going to be watching anyway. I said, "Yeah, Pastor Sam, bring him on. I'm glad I can help you out." Sam does so much for us, it felt good. And then Sam asked a second question. He said, "Alan, I'm going to be out November the 10th. Can you deliver the message?" I said, "Oh, Sam." I said, "We got elders and deacons. Aren't they supposed to do that job?" And Sam said, "Well," he said, "Alan," he said, "you know, we're just, a lot's going on." And he said, "If you could just help me." And I said, "Yes." And I felt good about that yes until this week. And then I didn't like that yes very much at all. In my work at the funeral home, I'm going to backtrack to July of 2018, June 30th, 2018. Sophia Fisher, who was a not blood related to us, but Sophia, our kids grew up with Sophia. Sophia grew up with us, was involved in an accident with her mom, and Sophia passed away. And at the accident site, the EMTs called my wife, Suzanne, and she went to the hospital. Suzanne called me from, I was at Fred's buying my laundry detergent and dish detergent and all that, and gave me an idea of what was happening, and we raced to the hospital, and somehow in those initial minutes, I became the liaison between Lyndon Richard and the funeral home, the coroner's office, the whole nine yards. And as that process developed, I became pretty good friends with Josh Hendricks, who works at Bowen Donaldson. And Josh would call me every few weeks, "Hey, Alan, just checking in with you. And hey, we might have a spot at Bowen Donaldson if you're interested." "Josh, I am grateful you checked in. I'm not interested." And then every month or so, every few months, Josh would touch base to see how things were going. And finally, I said, "Well, maybe. That might be something I'm going to be interested in doing." So we're going to talk a little bit about that today, but I want to start off telling you this story. Around 80 years of age, they say in the 80s, John Quincy Adams was walking, and he had a friend come up to him. And he said, "John Quincy Adams, how are you?" And John Quincy Adams responded by saying, "John Quincy Adams is well. He is quite well. Thank you for asking." And the man kind of looked and shook his head, and John Quincy Adams said, "But the house that John Quincy Adams is living in. Now, that's a different story. The walls are falling in. When the wind blows, I can feel its very foundation shake. The roof is starting to collapse. I can feel it. I know it. Everything in this house that is John Quincy Adams is falling apart. It's dilapidated. But John Quincy Adams is well. He is quite well. Thank you. I heard that story told, and the person who told the story said that a young person had said, "Gosh, you would think that the President of the United States would have had a much nicer house." He said, "John Quincy Adams probably had a nice house, but he knew the difference between the soul and the body." Since August the 1st, I have participated in some shape, form, or fashion, about 50 different funeral services. Now, I would say the 5 years prior to that, I participated maybe in 2 or 3 funeral services. Not something I ever had a desire to go to, but in the last 4 months, about 50 services. I thought about that story about John Quincy Adams because you see it come to life every week now in services that we hold. And as I thought about John Quincy Adams, I thought about this. I bet as John Quincy Adams walked away, I love putting my spin on stories. I tell Nick and Noah quite frequently, I tell stories about you guys all the time. And if somebody asks you, "Hey, did this happen?" your response is always to say yes, because I will embellish just a bit. But I like to think that John Quincy Adams, as he had that conversation about his body failing, knowing that his mind was not sharp as it once was, knowing that his feet hurt a little bit more that day than they did the day before, but as he told that gentleman that John Quincy Adams is well, he's quite well. And as he walked on, I like to think that John Quincy Adams said this: "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. They preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." John Quincy Adams knew the house he was dwelling in that day was going to fail. But I think as he finished Psalm 23, he knew, "But that's not the house I'm staying in." In 2 Corinthians, Paul spoke of the body as a tent, and he said this: "If this tent or dwelling falls down and blows away, we have a house not made with hands eternal in the heavens. One of these days," said Paul, "I shall be absent from the body and at home with my Lord, for I have a house not made with hands eternal in the heavens." In the services that we do at Bowen Donaldson, it really is quite amazing. Of the 50 that I've participated in, not one has been the same. They are all different. Different so much that it's almost uncanny that almost the same message can be delivered, but the services are quite different. It is rare that I don't get that bulletin, and in the work that I do at Bowen Donaldson, just like at church, that service, that order of service is critical. You got to know where you are and what your job is and what your responsibility is according to the service. But in almost every bulletin, there is the 23rd Psalm. It's printed in almost every one. And in a lot of services, and I'm not going to tell you not to do this, just if you know I'm going to work it, if you could choose something different, I'd appreciate it. But we're going to play Vince Gill. I can't remember the name of the song now. I just had it in my mind. But the Vince Gill song, does anybody know what the Vince Gill song is that I'm talking about? Say it again. Go rest high on that mountain. Yeah. But Vince Gill's going to be on the service. He's going to be on the service. Or if it's a younger crowd, then there's a song called Dancing in the Heavens or Dancing in the Sky. Whew, that one, if it plays more than once, it's been a long service for me. But the services, there are some things that are almost universal. Psalm 23 is going to be there. And some of the songs are going to be the exact same. But as I've participated in these services, there are some things that are fundamentally different. I've watched pastors and speakers try to tell a story, knowing that the substance that needs to be told can't be told. It's not there to tell. So we entitled the sermon that I gave Heather, Let Me Find Your Life in My Death. And that comes in the next song, In the Valley. But what I've seen is people have brought in their loved ones, and they're looking for that assurance. But there's a lot of struggle in trying to convince everybody else that this is what's going to take place. As I started at Bowen Donaldson, and I started seeing some of the things that were occurring, I kept going back to Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Because in the funeral home experience, when I first met with William Bowen and Josh Hendricks, Mr. Bowen said, now, Alan, he said, do you think you can handle participating in the services, helping run a service? And I said, well, Mr. Bowen, I've been in the school business since I was 5. I started kindergarten at 5, and I'm 54 now. I've never missed a day of school. I know how to run something. I can do it. I'm good. He said, now, do you think that, he said, you've had some health issues. Do you think you can lift flowers and move flowers? I said, oh, Mr. Bowen, I can move flowers. I can pick a flower up, put it in the truck. They can't be that heavy. And I can do it. I'm like the Toby Keith song. I'm as good once as I ever was. I can do it that day. He said, well, he said, that sounds good. He said, you can talk to people. I said, oh, I've had people bring 250 kindergartners to Annie Bell Clark. I've had to deal with moms leaving their babies with me. I can do it. I convinced them to let them stay. And then he asked this question. He said, we also need hands when we bring somebody in. So as we get ready to do the embalming and all those things, or we may need to go to a home, can you help do that? I said, oh, Mr. Bowen, we might have to think that one through a little bit. I said, I don't know. I said, I don't know if I can do that or not. But I'll try. I told my brother, I said, I'm thinking about doing this stuff at the funeral home. And he started laughing. He said, you can't do that. When my brother had his son, my nephew Adam, and Adam's in his 30s now. In fact, Adam's going to be a dad in the next month or so. But Adam was born, and I went home, and I took my brother fishing. I said, come on, man, you just had a baby. You need a little time. Come fish with me. So we go to a small pond, and we're bass fishing, and Stan catches maybe a 1.5-pound bass. And he was pretty tickled, but he's fishing with a lure, 3 sets of treble hooks. And as he's reeling him in, I said, now stand. Watch the other hooks. When you grab that bass by the mouth now, you watch the other hooks. Okay. I got him. And he was excited. Until I heard him say, ooh. And that hook was in that thumb. He was like, oh, he said, Alan, it won't come out. He said, it's stuck. Now, Stan's a musician, sings, plays a guitar, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I've messed up his guitar playing thumb. So we get in the truck, and Stan tells me, just go to the house, and we'll let Daddy cut it out. I said, Stan, we're not going to let Daddy do anything to your thumb. We're not going to the house. We're going to the hospital. So we go to Camilla, Georgia, to the ER. And in Camilla, Georgia, when you get to the ER, you have to knock on the door. And they had the slide plate. So you had to knock on the door, and the lady does this like you're in a prison or something. And she pulls the slide bar through, and she looks, and she said, what's the emergency? And Stan kind of looked, and I just grabbed his hand and held it up. And the lure's still hanging from his thumb. But by the time we get in, I wasn't feeling quite so hot. In fact, the blood felt like it was just moving away from my face. And things got a little hot. And then all of a sudden it felt like sweat starting to drip down a little bit. And I thought, man, why am I sweating? Then I thought, man, my focus is just a little bit. And I thought, I'm going to be sick. All because my brother had a lure in his finger. And now I'm telling him, hey, I'm going to help out with autopsies at Bowen Donaldson Funeral Home. So Stan was certainly he was not confident I was going to be able to pull this off. We do a couple services, and I get to do some of the easy stuff. And then finally, Josh calls me and says, hey, Alan, we need you to come in. And it was like 4 o'clock. I said, we have a service? He said, nope. He said, but we got work to do. He said, I need you to come in. He said, it'll be a good practice. Let's see. You don't have to do anything. Just watch. So I kind of pumped myself up all the way there thinking, okay, you can do this. It's going to be science. And I never got, any time a kid got hurt at Annie Bell Clark, handled it. And I got there and we walked in and I was a little bit suspect of what was before me. But all of a sudden, Martha came to life. Everybody had a job in that room. Everybody knew what each other was doing. They were getting the materials, the supplies, and they were taking care of the person. And as I watched this idea of Martha doing the work, and then it was, Alan, we need this sheet, and we need this towel, and can you get this cleaner, and can you do this? I thought, okay, I am like Martha. I'm a worker. I like to do tasks. I like cutting the grass. I like cutting that strip and looking back thinking, good, I did it. And then all of a sudden there was a need for Mary. Because through it all, I watched these gentlemen make a dramatic shift. They were doing all the critical things that had to be done. We got to find this vein. We got to get this artery. We've got to do this. We got to do this. We got to make sure that the embalming fluid is perfect. And then all of a sudden, I started seeing Mary. Because it was, I need to move this. We got to take care of this hand. And it needs to be just right. And then on the very first one of the guys said, Alan, we do need you to do this. This person apparently did not have their shoes on when they passed away. If you could just clean the bottom of their feet. Now my first thought was, who's going to know? Who's going to know? Nobody outside of this room will ever see it. But it was Mary coming through, taking care of the things that mattered the most. It was an amazing moment for me. And it's happened every time I've been in those situations. Watching Martha do Martha's work. And then watching almost Martha turn into Mary and taking care of that work. And then as we move into the service part, we've done all those things. And I'm telling you, it's almost every single service. We hear this. I hear the same thing from families. Wow. What a transformation. Thank you. You've heard it. You've been to services. You've been there when the person has said, they look better than they did when they got here. Now, they do. Because a lot of time and effort has gone into that practice of making it right. And all the work that we have done, I do very little, all the work that those guys have done, there is one fundamental thing that we are unable to do as we prepare for those services. At no point in time do we have the ability to save that soul, to rescue that soul. So many things we can do to a body. So many things we could have done for John Quincy Adams' house. We could have gave him some color in his cheeks. We could have had him sitting up so he looked like the President of the United States. We could have his hand placed perfectly. We could have had his... Since I'm not an elder or a deacon, I did not wear a tie today. That was an executive decision I made. But we could have had John Quincy's Adam. We could have had his tie tied perfectly. We could have had his hair fixed beautifully. And we'll have people give us a picture and say, if we could get close to this. And there have been times I thought, oh, you're dreaming a dream. And then I've left and come back and thought, how in the world? How did y'all do that? But there's one thing that we cannot do. And that's one of the most important things of all. I rarely use notes. As I kind of thought through what I wanted to say today, I told Suzanne, all I know about really is school. And the truth is, a majority of our families don't send their kids to public school, so there wasn't a lot of need for me to speak about public school during church service today. The next thing I know a lot about is record albums. I thought, well, I think I can tie that into the kids, but I don't know that I need to spend 30 minutes trying to tie that into the adults. I know a lot about parenting, but we've already done a Sunday school class on parenting, so I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. I thought, well, I think this is, I'm going to try to tie it to the funeral home. And at first I thought, well, maybe I'll just speak about my experience with Sophia and how that worked. I don't think I can do that. I don't think I'm strong enough to do that for a whole lesson. So I just thought, you know, I heard that story about John Quincy Adams. It just resonated with me. But then I've thought about Mary and Martha as the process they would have used as they prepared Lazarus. They loved him. And I can see Martha making sure everything was just right. Everything had to be perfect. Just like at the funeral home when we get ready for a service and you're to walk down the aisle, oh, we're supposed to be side by side. And it was pointed out to me the other day, now, Alan, when I walk down, I keep my hands at my side, but you always have your hands like this, and it would be better if we did the same thing. And I kind of looked and said what we've been saying at my house lately, oh, for Pete's sake. I don't think anybody's going to... It's just one of the details. It might make it look better if we do the exact same thing. When the service ends, One of you got, somebody's got to run, get the flowers. You got to throw them in one van, and you got to beat the procession so you can get the flowers set up, the speaker set up, the water bottles out there. Everything's got to be set up before. And we had one not long ago out on 41, and I got behind an elderly gentleman who was enjoying a leisurely Sunday on 41. And I thought, brother, we got somebody coming, and I got to have the flowers and the speaker set up. Martha, making sure it's perfect. And then I think about Lazarus and Mary and all the things that Mary would have done that were soul things. I think about Lazarus being restored again and coming back and knowing that at the funeral home, that particular piece, I don't think we're going to be able to make happen unless Christ so deems it. And that's the one part we can't really do. But what I have seen in those services, the service we had for this lady the other day, the service was a testament to her faith. Her family sad at her leaving. So many stories of her being in church, of her kids being raised in the church. We had a service yesterday afternoon where the son gave the eulogy and spoke about all that his mom had done to keep him in church, that she did her role as Christ would have had her done for him. So as I look at it, I think, you know, we can't restore the soul at Bowen Donaldson Home for Funerals. But we are providing the opportunity for us every service to think about our own lives, our own children, our spouses. Almost everyone I leave and I think a couple things. Will Suzanne know? And what will our kids say? Will they be confident? Or will their dad's work have been, yep, my dad did some work at the school. Yep, he left the three of us with 2,500 record albums that we don't know what we're going to do with all those things. And then he left. We enjoyed you, Dad. And kind of like Looney Tunes, that's all, folks. I don't want that. I want my kids to know. My dad worked hard. And he did this, and he did this, and he did this. And I know where my dad is. It brings me great comfort. It brings me great joy when I see that comfort on the face of others. It bothers me when I see those services where the families are doing all they can do to dance around that subject. It's such a gap. It's a loss. But you can see it. You can feel it. At every service that's been like that, it's the unspoken word in the air. Psalm 23 may be on that bulletin. But nobody has any evidence. They can't produce anything that says that that's really applicable to that person. John Quincy Adams, for the last several weeks, he has been my guy. 6-7 years ago, I told Suzanne, I said, I'm not feeling well. And Suzanne said, well, go to the doctor. I said, well, honey, I'm busy at work. I just can't take off and go to the doctor. I work. Okay, that sounds good. And I came back a few weeks later and I said, I'm not feeling well. I don't feel good. And Suzanne said, you need to go to the doctor. So, well, I'm not going to the doctor because they're just going to tell me the same thing, give me the same bottle of medicine. I'm not doing that. And finally, I told Suzanne, Suzanne, I'm not feeling well. And Suzanne basically said this. You're going to do one of two things. You're either going to tell me what to tell your children when you die from not feeling good. Do you want me to tell them you were hard-headed? Stubborn, that you were scared, that you were just fearful of what the doctor may tell you, that you were such a tightwad and you wouldn't spend the doggone money, even though you have health insurance. You tell me what you want to tell your kids. Or, she told me three things, or go to the doctor, or don't mention it to me again. Don't keep talking about it and not go. So, long story short, I go to the doctor and he said, hey, you've got a birth defect in your heart, buddy. You need to get that checked out. Man, what? So I blame my mother for having a birth defect in my heart. And I go to the doctor and everything is they've got a plan. We're going to be good. And then the doctor says, Alan, you got a, are you sick? Do you have a cold? I said, none. Feel fine. Other than just some regular stuff. He said, well, check that next time. You like got a little something on your lung. The next day at work, they call me at work. I'm in the middle of car rider duty at 8th Street Middle School, and he calls and says, we need you to come back next week. We want to rescan that place on your lung. And I said, okay, yep, next week's fine. And then the next morning, I called the nurse back. I said, now, we need to talk about why you called me yesterday. We're just checking. Anyway, we go back. Mr. Smith, do you smoke? I said, nope. I smoked a cigarette once, and I got caught by my daddy. That ended that. I said, no, I do not smoke. He said, well, you got something on your lung, and it's not good. We went through the whole process, and finally they said, Alan, we're going to have to take the bottom half of your lung. It's got something on it. It's got to come off. It'll kill you. And we went through the surgery, and the doctors did what they did, but we had a lot of after effects that have caused a lot of problems physically for the last 6 or 7 years. And when I heard that story on John Quincy Adams, I thought, well, I'm not in my 80s, but Brother John, I'm with you. I am with you. Alan Smith is well. I'm quite well. Confident. But his house gets on his nerve from time to time. Because from here to here, it's like an electric fence runs through my body. Hurts every day, every moment. But some days, it's like somebody dabbed a little bit of water on that electric fence, and it'll get you good. My feet just are more tired every day, it seems. I tend to forget more things today than I did yesterday. But Alan Smith is well, quite well. And I thought about it, if my children could say anything at my service, all I want them to really have to stand up and say is Alan Smith is well. Today he is quite well. His house just finally caved in on him. But he is well. I'm grateful that Pastor Sam trusted me enough to do this. I did tell my wife that I am not going to speak about Scripture. I'm not going to get heavy into Scripture. Because I don't think that's my role, because I'm not a pastor and I'm not an elder, not a deacon. As John Connolly said in a country song, I'm just a common man who drives a common van. And that's about all I am. And I didn't want to run the risk of being placed in this position and speaking of Scripture and getting something wrong. Nick asked me this morning, we were talking about this at the house, and Nick said, wait, Dad, you're preaching? I said, no, brother, I'm just doing the message. All of us, at some point or another in our lives, and most all of us have been through there already. Home for Funerals is coming. Bowen Donaldson, All Britain, Jameson, it's coming. And I've yet to have one where it was just everybody danced up and clicked their feet and were excited. But there is a fundamental difference. A fundamental difference between those that those children and loved ones know all is well and those that know all is lost. That is a big difference. All is well, all is lost. I'm grateful that New Life Presbyterian has provided me the opportunity to know all is well for Alan Smith. All is well. Thank you. I'm going to sit and I think y'all are going to come and...
You know, as I listen now, Alan Smith.